podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
That's some stat, mate.
That is brilliant, isn't it? What you'd like that?
I've literally got nothing I can say to that.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everybody. My name's James. Welcome to another Planet FPL Clash of the Correspondents. And we're a bit early ahead of game week 24, but we're looking forward to it either way, getting back in the swing of things with two of our correspondents. And I am delighted especially to welcome our Norwich City correspondent, Mark Hammond, back on COTC. How are you, Mark?
I'm good, thanks, James. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. And also delighted to welcome Mig, who's hoping to burst that Norwich bubble, our Crystal Palace correspondent, Mig Tavius. How are you, Mig?
I'm not too bad. It's not too bad. How are you doing, lads?
Very well, thank you, mate. Mark, if I'd have said to you 2 weeks ago, you're going to record this podcast and you're going to be 17th, would you have believed me?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it would be possible to think that in light of the fact that we'd gone six games without a goal. There was a lot of apathy sort of around the club and the feeling. The players were starting to get quite a bit stick as well. And yeah, basically that sort of the Palace away game was pretty much as low as it got, really, because it was not good at all. We did have quite a few injuries that day, a lot of COVID, but at the same time, it was pretty poor. And yeah, to turn it around, obviously, you know, the last two games, two back-to-back wins is quite impressive. And yeah, all of a sudden we're not dead. We're not, dead and buried. We've got something to fight for, and that's all we wanted, really, as fans. We wanted to be competitive. We didn't want to be the sort of the laughing stock of the league. And now, it looks like, well, it might only be four teams involved at the bottom, but it's game on, really. So,
yeah, every Everton fan, I think, just disagreed with that comment, mate.
Possibly.
I think possibly five. Good afternoon to our Evertonians. There's obviously been, it's interesting you use the word apathy, I think it's kind of spot on. You've been battered from all corners of the media. Me and Sid have criticised you on the podcast, feels like everybody has, and kind of written you off. Was that fair? I mean, was it that bad that you couldn't see a way out for yourselves?
I think initially, I don't think it really was fair, actually, because if you think about the start we had, it was four games where we didn't really expect to get anything.
Yeah, brutal start.
It's a bad start. And unfortunately, by losing the fifth game against Watford, where admittedly we were very poor, that then created a lot more pressure than there probably would have been had we picked something up in the first four games. And we quite easily could have. We could have easily got a point from the Leicester game, for example. But yeah, Watford game, we didn't turn up. And then we got a bit desperate. Farker started playing about with his formations and we didn't really know what was going on. We'd sort of see the team scratch our heads and think, I don't really get this formation. And he was desperate, He started playing five at the back, which he'd never done before, just to get a point on the board, basically. So we went to Burnley, nicked a 0-0. We could have probably won the Brighton game at home. Josh Sargent missed an open goal. I'm sure we'll touch on him a little bit in this episode. But yeah, he was mucking about with the team and, got to the point where we played Leeds at home. Williams was on the bench. Genuinely saw on the bench. We didn't have a left back. We was just getting desperate, and sort of it just dragged on and on before we could actually get some points on the board, and that resulted in Farker going. So we probably the Leeds game for me was where I thought that was pretty bad, and we probably did need a managerial change then. But I think as well it was the pressure coming from outside. We were sort of the laughing stock, if you like. People were sort of saying, "Oh, we're not competing at this level. We're an embarrassment to the league, all that sort of thing." Whereas if you was actually watching the games, they weren't all that bad initially, but it did get to the point where we needed to make that change.
Yeah, I mean the major problem you highlight the Leeds game was obviously game week 10, and we'd spoke in pre-season because your first four was Liverpool, City, Leicester, Arsenal. It was like welcome to the league, kind of big joke. The goals you scored in those first 10 games, one against Leicester, one against Watford, and then one against Leeds in game week 10. So you've gone 10 game weeks with three goals scored. And I think that's where people are like, what chance have they got? If you're not scoring goals, not like you're going to win a game 1-0, for example, because you're still conceding goals as well. I mean, you had a couple results in there, Burnley away 0-0, Brighton at home, you're right to highlight you was a little bit unlucky, actually, if you'd taken your chances, another 0-0. You weren't scoring goals or anything. Then you go to Brentford and win, and the manager gets sacked. What was the feeling at that stage? Had you already kind of resigned yourself to a change and removing Daniel Farke was the right thing to do?
Yeah, it was around that sort of time where there was a massive split in opinion. And actually, bizarrely, Brentford away was probably one of the best away atmospheres for quite a long time. You know, obviously, we weren't at the games last year, but even going back to the previous Premier League campaign, there weren't many weigh-ins like it. And although Parker was getting slated on sort of social media and whatever, even in the local press, there was a lot of sort of feeling that we needed a change. But like at Brentford, everyone was behind him singing his name. So when actually we was on the train on the way back, we heard he'd been sacked, we was, you know, quite shocked really, because Norwich aren't the sort of club really who make too many changes. So we're thinking, well, you know, they might well have gave him till the end of the season. And even because he's won the championship twice before, would they have even gone down that road? So yeah, it's quite ruthless in the end. Yeah, still a bit of a shock, but probably ultimately the right call.
And how you feel about current manager Dean Smith now, having kind of settled in, had 12 games or so?
Yeah, I think he's an upgrade on what we had. Yeah, he's got us more competitive, definitely. He's got, like you've said on your pod, we've stumbled across a system now, and it looks like we've got players playing in their right position, and it looks like we're a bit more fluid going forwards. And we've had to, you know, it is a case of now we need to score goals, so we've had to, you know, do something different. And I think now it's playing with sort of two attacking wide players, an old-fashioned 4-4-2. We're more direct and we're more difficult to beat.
Yeah, I want to come back to some of those individuals. I think you kind of seconding what I said on Monday's podcast, that you've got a formula now, which is likely to be what we see going forward. Miggy, are you a bit disappointed to be 13th?
Yeah. Yeah, in a word. Is that a case of the performances have been there, but the results haven't? The scoring, well, let's just get this out of the way, okay? The weekend could have gone a lot better if some decisions were made correctly, but you know.
Don't upset the Liverpool fans, Mick. No, you know that's not allowed.
I won't say a bad word about them. It's all the refs. But it's those sort of games where we've had momentum. The one against West Ham, score two goals, still get nothing. Score two goals against Southampton, still get a draw. Brighton game, we probably got more than we deserved. But in most of them, we've been playing
every year though against Brighton.
It's pretty much. I think we just do it just to troll them. Just like,
you're right.
You just attack, and then we'll score. Be fine. We could win if we wanted to. But it's the performance has been there, especially without Zaha, which we probably as a fan base were quite worried about. You know, him going away, Ayew going away, Kouyaté going away, all for the AFCON. And for a good month or so, not just like having him out for a week or so. But I think the players have stepped up in his place. Mateta, for one, has had his Benteke end of the season bounce when he was threatened about us shipping him on, even though he's only got him on loan. Elise has stepped in Ayew's stead. Looked a little bit out of games at sometimes, but then can just easily just grab a game by the... I say by the scruff of the neck, but he just looks like he's on a sun lounger for the whole game. But it's so relaxed on the ball. It's incredible. But yeah, to only be 13th with some of the performances we've been putting in, it's just usually individual errors or a sloppy bit of defending, or like the Liverpool game, out of the game within the first half an hour. And then we're just giving ourselves far too much to do up front, which we haven't historically been great at. But I think this season we've been probably a lot better than we have been. But hopefully, if we keep the performances up, the results will come, as they say.
I mean, I'm in a position, Big, where my team's already played you twice in the league, and I'm quite pleased about that, that I don't have to play you again. I think when we played you at Tottenham over Christmas, you've had the COVID stuff going on. We caught you at the right time. Your mate, Wilf, had a bit of a moment. And ironically, he hasn't played since that game. We missed the West Ham game, I think, because of COVID. He'd obviously missed the Norwich game because of suspension, now gone to AFCON. And it's interesting that the results haven't been brilliant since his absence. You've only beat Norwich, ironically. But it doesn't feel like the miss that he has been in the past, where he's been so talismanic for you. And that's because I think other people are stepping up, and the depth of the squad feels so much better, I think, where there are actually options in attacking areas. Like you mentioned Mateta, he's come from nowhere back onto the scene now. And I mean, at 5.2, is he first choice up front now? Is that where it's at the moment?
I don't think he'll be first choice. It's when... Well, Ayew is back at the weekend, but obviously he went straight onto the bench. When Wilf and Ayew are back, I'm not too sure if they're just going to go straight back in like they had at the start of the season, which would be a bit harsh on Elise, I think. But yeah, Mateta and Edouard have been, when they played the two of them up top against Liverpool, they were cutting them to pieces pretty much at times. But that's obviously, Liverpool play a very high line, so they could get in behind them quite easily, like a team like Norwich or Watford or something like that aren't going to do. But I think he's probably still behind at least Edouard. I'm surprised Benteke hasn't played more in recent games. I think Mateta's form and the fact that he's actually scored some goals has sort of at least pushed him in front of Benteke. But they're completely different. Well, not necessarily completely different options, but they deliver different things for the team. So it may just be a game on game case, but I think Wilf probably go straight back in a left forward, if not one of the front two, and probably Edouard stays in. So,
yeah, that's fair. It's difficult to see Mateta as ahead of Edouard, I think. But then interestingly, actually, when you did play Norwich a few weeks back, Edouard played the wider role, Mateta up front. It was obviously similar against Liverpool at the weekend. But I think you're right. I think the best team is probably with Zaha back in, is probably Edouard back into the sanctuary. What's the situation with Benteke then? Has he got too long left on his contract? Or
No, I think he's perfectly fine on the contract. I think he's just...
He only seems to perform when he needs to perform, is the point, isn't it?
Yeah, well, towards the end of the season. I mean, he started all right. He's done okay this season so far. It tends to... He becomes an FPL asset when his contract is running low. Let's say that.
Yeah, Edouard at 6.4. Any love for that at the moment?
I nearly got him in for the Norwich game, but I kind of overthought it and sort of tried to save a future transfer when I wildcarded. So I ended up not getting him in and getting Watkins in, which was really annoying because I haven't really played Watkins since. But yeah, I mean, with our run of games, he could be. Obviously, there's cheaper options at the moment, I would say, you know, and King and people like that. You know, I don't want to say his name too loudly, it might trigger some people.
I think people are still triggered either way, Nick. They know where you're at, whether they heard Emmanuel Dennis or not, they're still triggered.
Yeah, they know who I'm talking about. There's some others around their price range, but I think with the run of games, if he keeps his spot, then yeah, he could definitely be an option for maybe a downgrade. Well, we've got a couple of games in hand coming up as well, so yeah.
There's a few attacking assets of particular interest that I want to come back onto actually with you, Mick. But Mark, I'm going to ask: were you at the game at Selhurst Park?
No, I thankfully wasn't.
I heard it was bad.
Yeah,
from a Norwich fan perspective.
Yeah, it was. Like I said, obviously the players were starting to get a little bit stick, which. Sort of, it was coming, like, and for Norwich fan base to turn like that is quite something, really, because our fans, you know...
You're not like that.
No, we're quite, like, we're a sort of a laid-back fan base, and we're certainly, like, not like some clubs. Like, if we were to get a manager sacked, like, it would take a lot longer than... It's just the area of the country we're in. People are a lot more laid-back and relaxed about things, I think.
He's giving us London a stick there, I think. Go on, carry on.
But do you know what? Like, no, I mean, yeah, that away, and I know plenty of my mates who was there, and it was quite something, I think. And yeah, people just getting a little bit pissed off. And Dean Smith touched on it before the Everton game in his press conference. He sort of done a bit of a rallying cry and turned around and said, "Look, enough's enough. Really, we, you know, like, he weren't a fan of sarcastic chanting and." he just sort of said, like, get behind the team, you know. And, yeah, fair play to him. I don't think anyone could argue with that because people were just fed up. It obviously turned on some individuals. It's not ideal, put it that way.
It was the sort of thing when the Norwich fans were cheering the pitch invader for the fact that he got a touch in the box.
He scored as well, didn't he? Yeah, so...
It's not relevant from an FPL perspective at the moment, Mark, but I think there'll be many outsiders who've watched Billy Gilmore but have not watched him for Norwich will be stunned with the fact that he specifically got so much stick that he was the one that seemed to be getting it individually as well.
Yeah,
I know there was a lot of you're not fit to wear the shirt was aimed at the whole players.
Yeah,
but there was a go back to Chelsea element with Billy Gilmore. Why has that been the case?
I think the whole thing with Billy Gilmore, if you sort of go back to the start, we was all excited by him. We know that through his performances for Scotland and for Chelsea, we've sort of referred to him as, you know, like he runs the show and he's, you know, he's a baller and this, that and the other and everything like that. And I'm sure he will have a good future in the game. We came into the season with high hopes for him. We thought, you know, his first name on the team sheet, it's a big name, he'll be just what we need. And, you know, he hasn't been up to it, unfortunately. So I think part of it is the, you know, that side to it where we feel like, you know, it's just unfortunate, one of them things, it's not worked out. But at the same time, I mean, some of his performances have been really, really poor. And yet the thing is that, you know, a lot of the social media side would be Chelsea fans who would be bigging him up and this, that and the other. And even the sort of the national pundits, this, that and the other, love Billy Gilmore. They love raving about him and sort of saying what a good player he is. So I think that's obviously had a bit of an effect on our fan base where we're like, hang on a minute, we watch this guy every week. He certainly doesn't run the show. Players with half of his ability are getting games, rightly so, ahead of him because they have more of an influence and they do look better. And you're talking like Lucas Rupp, Kenny McLean, Sorensen, players like that who, you know, who are actually outperforming Billy Gilmore. So there's a reason why he's not in the team. I mean, he's injured at the moment, but he wouldn't get back into our team at the minute. And he, you know, and it's a shame.
It's mad. But I think like for people who haven't watched you this year or seen him play for Norwich, and just even reflect on his performance for Scotland at Wembley against England, like won't be able to, the names you're mentioning against him, people won't be able to comprehend that, actually.
Of course not. But, you know, one thing you'll say for him, he looks to get the ball, he collects it from defence, he's always looking for that pass. You know, he is looking to be that creative influence, which we badly need, but then he'll get the ball and he'll ping it into like row H of the stand or something like that. And it stands out because of a lot of, you know, he's the one player who looks for that pass. And yeah, just some of his corners and things like that when it's right in front of us. And it's just unfortunate, but he's just not being good at all. The funny thing is you'll go onto social media and it'll be like everyone banging on about him and that. We don't see it at all, unfortunately. I think the agreement is that we still keep him for the rest of the season. He's injured, but he's back at Norwich now.
Would you rather not? Would you genuinely just send him back?
We wouldn't miss him. We wouldn't miss him at all. But
that's amazing.
Yeah, but I think our squad's, you know, in need of midfield options because we've got a lot of injuries at the moment. And I think they're talking about him and about four or five others coming back for the Wolves Cup game. So, you know, obviously if we can get him fit, it'll be in and around the squad. But he wouldn't probably get in the team as it stands.
Anything you'd like to say to Sudge about him? Because he's still sitting in Sudge's squad.
Well, he talks about getting rid of him every episode, doesn't he? So
he does, yeah.
Literally every week he talks about the Gilmore out transfer, but seems to want him to hang around for some reason.
I don't think he's quite got the money to go from Gilmore to Salah.
He needs to do something, doesn't he?
he should try and find a way of making it happen, I think. Talk to me, Mark, about Adam Ede. I'm really particularly keen to speak to you about because I feel like his position in particularly is really helping with what we've seen in the last couple of weeks in terms of his support of Pukki. What role is he actually fulfilling for the club at the moment?
So he's basically playing a lot deeper than he was. He's sort of going to collect the ball, and he's probably what we've been missing in between the midfield and the striker, Pukki, because Pukki's been isolated through no fault of his own. He's not really had any kind of service this season, and you know, if you give him chances, he'll score, but we don't really create anything for him. So we have needed someone to play off of him, with him. We've needed to do something, otherwise it's pointless Pukki playing. But yeah, Ida, he's a young guy who we've had high hopes for a couple of years. And there was a bit of a decision before the season. Do we send him out on loan or do we keep him? We sent Hugo out on loan. And Ida sort of carried on really doing what he's been doing, just appearances off the bench. And even when he has played, like at Spurs, for example, you think, okay, yeah, he looks lively. But as I think you said on one episode, he doesn't ever look like scoring. And that's the same when I've watched him for Ireland as well. Like, you never feel like he's actually going to get a goal. And he's now played quite a lot of games for us. It is time he stepped up. And thankfully, in the last month, we've actually seen it where Dean Smith's, like, hopefully now going to give him a proper run of games and we'll hopefully be rewarded one way or the other. But at least we'll know then, you know, quite how good he is. And that goal against Everton hopefully will kickstart him.
Yeah, I think it's particularly important for Pukki. And I don't think Pukki's showing up as an FPL asset on radar at the moment.
It's got more points than Kane, aren't you?
What's that, Mark?
It's got more points than Harry Kane.
That's some stat, mate.
That is brilliant, isn't it? I
literally got nothing I can say to that. How many points has Pukki got?
He's got about, I checked it, it's about 70, 75 maybe, something like that. About 70 odd. Harry Kane's not far behind, but...
Who do you reckon will have more at the end of the season, Pukki or Kane?
I don't know. Well, I think it should be Kane, shouldn't it? But he's due an injury probably quite soon, isn't he?
So if I said to you, go on there, honest question, Mike, if I said to you, right, Pukki or Ida to put one into the team now. Pukki 5.8, Adam Ida 4.9. Where would you go with that? Would you want Pukki in to play every week, or would you look at Ida and go perfect third forward for the possibly a 3-5-2?
The way I'd play the game, I'd go with the cheap forward and I'd go Ida, yeah. Just for the saving, you know, if there's not that much between them, yeah, you would do that. And bench Ida most of the time probably, depending who he's playing.
Do you think he'll keep his place going forward in forthcoming weeks?
I think so.
I think so as well. And I think you've landed on this system with him kind of playing as a 10. And I also like the fact that he's got awareness that he can go into wide areas, which can allow Rashica and Sargent to get involved as well. I mean, I guess he's the other one that we have to mention. Is Josh Sargent finally the answer? And is he a lot better than every FPL content creator actually thinks he is?
It's just hilarious because he watching him, he was comedy gold and he was a laughing stock. And, you know, it's a lot of money he's cost us for Norwich, you know, standards. Like, we shelled out £9 million on him. And for the first half of the season, we're thinking, what on earth is this guy all about? Because we didn't...
So that was you guys were thinking it as well. It wasn't just us on the outside thinking, is this? You were thinking it as well.
He was full of energy. And I'll give him something, the Southampton game where... He came on at half-time in the Southampton game. Cantwell got hauled off. And he was brilliant in that second half of the Southampton game. But I think, like you've sort of touched on, he is young. He's a young guy. We've spent a lot of money on him, which, like, there is a frustration with the fan base where we've spent a lot of money on up-and-coming players, whereas we're thinking, hang on a minute, we need these players now. It's no good investing for the future and having, like, these guys... Potentially having resale value and everything. We need players now who are able to come and do a job at this level. It's funny really because he's now overnight turned into a bit of a cult hero. Everyone was just finding it hilarious on Friday night. The fact that, you know, he scored that goal and then out of nowhere he's somehow leapt like a salmon and scored an unbelievable header as well. It was just hysterical. It was funny.
Brilliant. I'm glad that in a way that he you're saying he did look as bad as we all thought that he looked as well. I mean, the miss against Brighton's been highlighted as well, but I mean, there was one game I watched and I thought, I'm not even convinced you're any kind of top level of footballer, considering
even at Spurs, he had a brilliant chance at Spurs. He missed it, didn't he?
He came on at Spurs for Ida, and I'll be honest, the person I was sitting with said, he went to say it, and I said, "Don't say it." I said, "We're both thinking the same thing. Don't say it." And what we was both thinking was, this guy's coming on, he's not going to do nothing. But you don't want to tempt fate in case you say it, and obviously he scores. And he had an air kick, he should have scored in the second half as well. And it was, we both looked at each other as if to go, yeah, no, he's not good enough. But it was obvious, particularly Friday night, and I've not seen many of your games recently, Mark, but Friday night, right from the off, he was working so hard for the team. I think that position on the right is suiting him better, where there's obviously less pressure on him to definitely score goals. And because he's working hard, he gives good protection in front of Max Aarons and can get involved with the midfield and arrive late in the box. And obviously, as I said, Ida can float into that position that allows him to come inside as well. So go on in, all three of them, you wouldn't put Josh Sargent in your FPL team, would you, surely?
Nah, I'd go Ida, yeah. But having said that, imagine Sargent scored, you know, in the next game. You know, that's where you'd be thinking, you know, potentially then you could have a change of thought. But initially, I'd go with the cheapest one.
If Josh Sargent scores again against Crystal Palace, he will be all the rage ahead of Manchester City and Liverpool in your next two fixtures. Yeah.
Can you imagine?
How would you, Mig, hearing that from Mark, how would you feel bringing sort of Mateta and Edouard into that conversation if we're discussing FPL forwards, which kind of feels like a problem position at the moment? Would you have enough faith to give Edouard a go if we think that he's the most likely starter of the three?
If
we include Benteke in the conversation as well.
I'd say I was very close to bringing him in, which would have been great at the time because he scored like four goals since. If Edouard was the nailed one, then yeah, I would bring him in. I mean, who have I got at the moment? Watkins, Antonio and King. So I could, you know.
You haven't got Dennis?
No, I ain't got Dennis.
Oh, God. Carry on.
I bought Foster in this week. That went out fantastically. You know, if Watford could like played like they did again, then I could easily swap King out and go with Edouard. Our run of games is, you know, quite good. Norwich, Brentford, and then Chelsea, but then Burnley and Wolves. So, you know, there's a good run of games there.
We've spoken about this with you every time we spoke to you this year, Mig, saying your fixtures are never bad. There is a difficult fixture gets dropped in, like Chelsea game week 26, but there's Norwich, Brentford, Burnley either side. We think there's a possibility as well that you'll double in 25, possibly bringing the Watford fixture into there as well. So we could be in a position, and I'm sure we'd notice if it was going to happen before the 24 deadline, where suddenly it's Norwich away, Brentford away, Watford away, and obviously the last two as part of a double. And then suddenly people who wanted to bin Dennis and King and that are going to be like, oh, wow, look, Palace, we've got Norwich next, and then a nice little double as well. And Edouard will be the one you're getting questioned most about, I think, rather than Mateta.
Yeah, I can imagine people going from, like, asking about Mateta because, you know, he's over £1 million cheaper. But I think Edouard is probably the safer pick for them. He's a little bit more, but he's in around that sort of Dennis King sort of price point. And even against the bigger teams, I mean, he scored against Liverpool. He would definitely be the one that I would go for. And I may even go for him this week.
I think the problem is because we're going to have so many doubles with Edouard, it might be a case that if that 25 double comes up, I think he'll be really interesting very quickly. People will be talking about him. But I also think he'll very quickly get sacrificed when you play Chelsea in 26 and there's someone else then got a double in 26. I think it would be a short-term pick, whereas Michael Olise, Mig, I might need talking out of buying this boy.
You're not going to find it from me.
he looks the real deal to me. Talk to me about him, mate.
It's just like watching it. I mean, we were getting the ball passed around us for most of the game. And then we turn into second half FC and he's just controlling the ball, just touching. I mean, the effort on goal that he nearly lobbed Alisson with, it's just like he was playing in the park with his mates. It's just so laid back about it. And the thing is, he's getting the returns as well. He's getting assists. He's got the odd goal here and there. for his price, he, you know, he's competitively priced as well. So I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't be against people going for him. Obviously, there's a lot of competition around his price as well, and with doublers. But you know, if he does get double in 26, he's another one that sort of ones you can hop on and off from. Or if he's against Chelsea, you can just bench him against Chelsea and just play him in the remaining fixtures. I can't see why you wouldn't buy him and you wouldn't put him on your team straight away.
Yeah, he's 5.4. I think I know what you're saying about competitive prop, but I think actually at that valuation, he's the one that really stands out at that price at the moment. Partly as a long-term asset, possibly potentially also as a short-term asset. I think the only thing that will concern people is when they look at his minutes. He's got five attacking returns, only played sort of 500 minutes. Now, obviously, missed the majority of the start of the season through injury. He is being nursed a little bit. And I think the concern I have most about Elise is you got Ayew, obviously, is in direct competition with him. Mm-hmm. You've got Wilfried Zaha, subject to what happens at AFCON, is going to be back, if not for 24, definitely for game week 25. You've got the front foot players like Edouard can obviously play in wide areas as well. It's quite competitive. And Eze is obviously back available now as well. So there's a real competition for places. And that's the real thing that does make me a little bit nervous about Elise. And I also know that Vieira might look at any given game and go, I really want Jordan Ayew to do a defensive job for the team here.
Yeah.
And leave Elise out. That would be the concern for me.
Oh yeah, Ayew is definitely the harder working of the two of them, especially defensively. He does a lot more running and stuff like that. So probably if Ayew hadn't gone to AFCON and or came back earlier and was available for Liverpool, then he probably would have played Ayew against Liverpool to help protect Joel Ward behind him. So that's my main worry is that. My main worry for Elise anyway is that Ayew comes in because he's the harder worker and then Elise becomes that sort of super sub again, like he was becoming in that sort of second quarter of the before Christmas. He would be coming on for Ayew and he would be getting returns, but it's whether or not he comes on with
that's
enough
not good
minutes.
Enough then, is it? If you're half hours and stuff like that. No.
Sort of if he's coming on with enough minutes in order to do that, or he's coming on for the last 10 minutes and you're kind of thinking, well, I'm not going to get anything from
him. That's the point that's the real concern for me. I don't actually have a doubt that if he's going to start the games that he's going to be certainly decent value for his price anyway and worth a shot, particularly for these next two game weeks, like I said, if that double does land. And we should probably point out, I'm talking about doubles, you might be aware there is one or isn't by the time you listen to this. We are recording on Tuesday evening, the 25th, before this goes out to everyone on Thursday. Anything else in the midfield area would be interesting? What about Conor Gallagher? I mean, is Gallagher still a better pick than Elise then? Is he worth paying extra for?
Gallagher's probably, he's definitely going to get the minutes. I can't see Vieira dropping him.
Nah.
At all until...
He obviously won't play against Chelsea in 26, of course.
But then you're probably not going to play many of your Palace assets if you've tripled up on them, which obviously you have, against Chelsea.
Sure, Mick. Yeah. So just still got Billy Gilmore, so you never know.
Bless him. He's the one who's going to get the minutes. He had a bit of a dip. I mean, he was out for a couple of games with COVID and then obviously he needed a couple of games to get back into the running of things, but you know, he's grabbed a goal. He's back to running the show. I think of the midfield options, if you don't want to play risky and go Milivojevic, don't do that, then Gallagher's probably the safest and will probably end up with the most points at the end of the season for the team.
I can't see Sidge upgrading Billy Gilmore to Luka Milivojevic somehow with Michael Elise only 0.1 more. I think he's an interesting one, Gallagher, in the sense that he obviously offers really good value. He kind of is a player, I think, once he's in, you've got to stick with it and stay with him. He's got 12 attacking returns, but he's only returned in three games since game week 12. It kind of does feel a little bit feast or famine with it. There's plenty you would have had the 9-pointer at Brighton, and the 15-pointer against Everton in game week 16, which justifies the longer-term holds. We're not talking about kind of an extra sevens here. You've got 2 sevens, you've got 15 in there, which kind of gives you a bit more breathing space in terms of expectation. I don't think he's expendable yet, Gallagher. I'd certainly hold on if you have him. And I wouldn't personally move sideways to Elise. But I think once that Chelsea game comes around in 26, it might be that he becomes expendable for people then.
Especially if teams are, if they're starting to dish out double game weeks to teams, then if you've got a bit of money into him, then you're basically selling him for a profit and shipping
what
him
off. What would you say is Vieira's first choice midfield three in now? Is it what it is at the moment with Schlupp and Hughes? Or do you think MacArthur's got a shot of coming back in once he's available?
MacArthur would go in instead of Schlupp, I believe.
Okay.
It's probably Hughes, MacArthur and Gallagher, maybe Kouyaté sort of in there. But I think those three, if everyone was fit, it would probably be those three with Hughes' form of recent games.
James MacArthur is due back soon, I believe.
Yeah, could potentially be the next game week, but he'll probably, I'm not sure if he'll just thrust him straight into the team or...
He could potentially be such as Billy Gilmore replacement at 4.3. I think there'd be a lot of sense in that, actually. I mean, because if James MacArthur's available and he's going to play every week at 4.3, he becomes the best budget midfielder in the game, I think.
Hmm.
Well, obviously you'd leave him on the bench nearly every week.
Yeah.
But if you're wildcarding and stuff, he's the one that you'd go with. Is there anyone cheap in the Norwich midfield, Mark, that we'd consider a really cheap value for that purpose?
I don't
there are
going to
be people wildcarding at the moment.
We've got too many injuries at the moment. I think, once Norman's fit, he'll be a locket back in the team. He's our best midfielder. And then probably with the formation we're, you know, assuming we stick to what we're doing at the moment, there's only going to be one more spot in the team next to him, which would probably go to Lees Malou at the moment, I would have said. So thankfully they've got rid of that triangle, which was in the middle of the park. It's operating better with just the two. So, yeah, Norman needs to get up to speed, and then probably it'd be Lees Malou. Not really FPL assets, though.
Any love for Rashica as an alternative to Elise, for example, similar price?
But you need to see something in terms of assists from him, really. So he's, the price is absolutely fine. He's nailed, he's playing really well, but probably not scoring enough goals, are we, to warrant, you know, putting him into an FPL team? Unless we had a double game week, going forward, and, you know, there was a nice home fixture in there or something like that, you could take a wild punt, but...
Yeah, I think in terms of the offensive ones, it would be Eder for me, for the exact purpose of third forward, I want to play five in midfield where I'd be at. And then if you lose one, fine, he's playing at the moment, he can come in off the bench.
Yeah, and it's like we said all along, really, in terms of the value at Norwich, it's good value in terms of it's nice and cheap bench assets and, you know, not necessarily to play, but you've got two, three players there, like we said at the start of the season, where... You know, line your bench with them and hopefully you won't need them. But if you do, they'll probably pick up a couple of points here and there.
Yeah, double also impossible for you before game week 28. You've only got the one game to rearrange, which is Leicester away.
Yeah.
But because of Leicester's involvement in the Europa Conference League, that can't be till game week 28 at the earliest. And that would be only if Leicester did get eliminated from the last 32 of the Europa Conference. It's highly unlikely that Leicester will have a double probably this side of the March, April kind of international break. Is more likely to be on the other side of that as it stands. And of course, after Palace, as we've joked, it is then City at home, Liverpool away. So I don't think you're not going to be looking at a Rashica for 5.2. There's some interesting fixtures afterwards, though. I've mentioned a few times, Mark, you've got some winnable home games left still. Brentford, Burnley, Newcastle. They're going to, it's three big games at home between now and the end of the season. There's some tougher ones around that as well. City, Chelsea, West Ham, Tottenham. Your other home games to come. Those three I've mentioned are going to be particularly important, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely. I think we'll pick up some points at home. Whether that would be enough or not, you know, obviously time will tell. We will need to pick up some points away, you know. Not to say we won't. Southampton potentially on Friday night. It's coming up quite soon. That's a massive game. And it probably be a case of we need to win there. It might well be. Assuming we lose to Liverpool, Man City, we'll probably need to go there and win if we are going to stay up.
There's a free game spell there. I think Southampton away, Brentford at home, Leeds away. Game which 27 to 29 is highly likely to be decisive.
I think so.
That free game period where I think, you're you're probably going to need to win two of those three, I think, looking at the other fixtures you've got.
Yeah.
I mean, the other away games you've got after that period, Brighton, Man United, Villa, Wolves. Winnable, but not great. Not games you really look at and go, oh, I fancy us today. They're tough away games for the majority of teams. Talking of budget options, Mark, Brandon Williams absolutely nailed now, isn't he, I think, at left back? Mark maybe disagrees.
Yeah, well, he's not been great up until the Everton game. He's a funny player.
Because I watched all the Everton game, he was good.
Yeah, he was. And he's had a few good games this season, but he's also had some terrible ones as well. So, yes, at the moment he's got the shirt. He's played well the last two games. But, I mean, we thought he was going to kick on after probably the Arsenal fixture. He was good down there, game week four, and he had a few sloppy weeks. He's a funny player. He's all blood and thunder. He's all everything you want from a left-back in many ways. Yeah. Committed, he loves a tackle, he bombs forward. But sometimes positionally in defensive play, the basics you want from a left-back, he has some sloppy moments. So, like, one of the worst left-back displays I've seen in a long, long time was him against Arsenal, and that was only Boxing Day. He's been good the last 2 weeks. We'll see. Hopefully...
He's 3.9.
Yeah, well, hopefully he continues.
And you're looking better, Mark. He's getting people excited.
Yeah.
He wants to buy him, Mark.
Well, crack on.
Is that position still a problem then? Because that's been highlighted quite a lot. Left side of Norwich's pitch, giving away a lot of chances.
Yeah. And the thing is, you've got Gianluca on the bench still. It's not like he's injured and, he still comes on quite a lot, Gianluca. The only interesting thing was actually the Everton game where Brandon Williams did come off. Sam Byram came on before Gianluca. But then moments later, Aaron's got injured and but Byron then had to go right back, Gianluca left back. But the interesting thing, like I say, is Byron potentially now could be ahead of Gianluca, but you've then got two players sort of on the bench who are breathing down his neck. So
Byron's naturally right back though, isn't he?
Yeah.
That was certainly where he played most commonly in his West Ham days. He's obviously missed, 2 years worth for injury
nearly,
at your place, I think?
Yeah, because it's a Liverpool terribly game, wasn't unlucky. It? Pretty much 2 years ago now, wasn't it? So it's that Liverpool game, February 2020. It looks all right since he's been back, but they wanted to, because we had so many injuries and COVID cases, he had to come back a lot quicker than he should have.
He ended up playing in midfield, I think it was against Villa, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The second half of that, yeah.
So, I think he's really waiting and, have to wait and see. While we're winning and picking up points, I'm sure Williams will stay in, but I guess it will only take one sloppy performance and that might change things.
I think for people not considering of using the chips anytime soon, and perhaps wildcarding, I think Williams is a real strong shout. There's a strong case to go to Ito as third forward and Williams as your fifth defender.
Yeah.
As it stands, I think that's absolutely fine. Any case for goalkeeper as well, mate? What's the news on Tim Krul? I'd said it was ACL injury, but apparently it's only shoulder injury. It's an AC joint, apparently.
I think it's 4 to 6 weeks. So
it could be a while.
Yeah, it could be a little while. Yeah, I think they were saying going to miss maybe sort of 5 games or so. It's a big blow, actually, because...
Agreed.
Yeah, I mean, Krul is... Yeah, he might drop a few clangers here and there, but generally is solid. We've got generally more problems to worry about than Tim Krul a lot of the time, So, Gunn, we're not sure about, really. He wasn't great the games he came in over the Christmas period. He worried me a little bit in the second half on Friday night. But hopefully it's just a case of, him needing a few games, get up to speed, get his confidence back, because he hasn't played a lot of football in the last couple of years. And when he was with us in the Championship, he had a really good season. He was, very well thought of, and we'd love to have signed him then. So
what's the general feeling from fans about him? Because I think with goalkeepers, like we'll come onto this with yours in a minute, Meg, when your first choice keeper's missing, you get a kind of real resignation feel and fear, I think, if you don't rate your number two. What's the general feeling from the supporters towards Angus Gunn?
That well, exactly that. It's a massive blow, and we're a little bit concerned, shall we say? Yeah. There's no way of telling exactly what he'll be like. But I mean, it's not that long ago Southampton shelled out a huge amount of money for him. Really, he's obviously gone off the boil, and he's come to us to get his career back on track. Probably confidence is probably a massive issue for him. He just needs probably a couple of clean sheets, and hopefully, you know, hopefully he'll be fine.
Yep, good luck with that. Man City, Liverpool coming up. Big Gator, he's back in goal. Where's he been? What's going on, mate?
He hurt his finger.
So did everybody else. Is their thumbs trying to take him out their FPL teams? I
pretty
think,
much. yeah, he just hurt his hand in one of the games, and then got dropped basically. As Mark was saying, we had a kind of similar thing with Butland. I mean, he came in the FA Cup and properly dropped a clanger. And you're at that point, you're sort of rolling your eyes, thinking, "Oh God, here we go." But then he admitted in his interview post Brighton that, you know, he felt down about that. But then he's at an age now where he has to, like, right, I'll brush that off. And he had a good rest of that game. We ended up winning. And then he had a man in the match performance against Brighton.
Yeah, which then surprised me that then Gator was back in goal afterwards.
Yeah, that's what someone asked me. Oh, is Butler nailed now? You know, he's had a couple of good performances. Is he now? And I was like, probably not. You know, that's the thing with...
Yeah.
Having a backup keeper, they need to have like a string of good games rather than, oh, you've come in, you've had a good game, but now our number one guy, our consistent guy has come back. And you need to have like Gunn has now, if he's got like 4 to 6 weeks to prove that he can make that step up to more than challenge Krul, then that's the sort of break a backup goalkeeper needs rather than sitting on the bench and proving it in training the whole time. They can be great then, but if they can't do it on the stage, then they're not worth the time. But
what made this particularly awkward for Gator owners as well was they could see that he's on the bench.
Yeah.
But apparently, I think going back as far as, was it the Norwich game, Butland first played in goal? It was certainly roundabouts that
time. No, well, you'll love this because I ended up getting, because of Twitter rumours,
go on, Mark.
For the Norwich home fixture, I ended up buying Butland, didn't I, because of the Twitter rumours. And I fancied Palace for, obviously, you know, to
score.
Well,
you got some faith, Mark, didn't you?
Well, you would have seen my team this week, what I did.
So you end up buying Butland. Have you still got Butland?
Still got Butland on the bench. God knows what we'll do with. Well, just have to leave him there, won't I? Like Billy Gilmore.
Angus Gunn, mate.
You're going to buy Gunn, aren't you?
Well, maybe not. Maybe not. the thing is, I ended up buying, for sort of a bit of context on it, I ended up, because the Arsenal game got called off that week, didn't it? And I had Ramsdale, so I needed to do something, really. And I just got carried away with the whole, you know, Butland's playing thing on Twitter, and yet he didn't. So that was a stupid manoeuvre. But I was right to move Ramsdale on, but I shouldn't have gone there. Now he could just sit on the bench because I've got De Gea in goal. So it's just
Gator owner's safe now. Like, if they're still sitting there with him, he's number one again, is he?
Yeah, yeah. I think they'll be fine until he hurts himself again.
Ironically, I think potentially brilliant option for the next couple of weeks, especially if that double lands. Last time you were on, Mig, I asked you about the defensive players, Ward, Mitchell, Anderson and Gay. They're doing really well together. Have any of them jumped ahead kind of from that pack now? You'd go, if I was investing for FPL, that's the one I'd go with.
It's the sort of thing with the defence where they can look great one game. Like Anderson against Liverpool, he looked great for most of the game. He was pinging passes all over the place. Probably got an assist. Well, he would have got an assist for Elise's. I think he may have passed it to him if he had got over the got that lob in. But then against Brighton, he looked terrible. Ward had his 50p head on. He couldn't find a Palace player with any header. But then Liverpool, they're looking great. So if I have to buy one of them, it'd probably still be sort of either Mitchell or Anderson. Well, if they don't, I don't nothing.
Gahey's the highest scorer, isn't he?
Yeah,
it feels like he's arguably the bigger set piece threat. The fullbacks Mitchell, and I think Mitchell, I really like him. Every time I watch him, I think he's a better player every time. But the attacking output, I think it's still a little bit away at the moment. That's never really going to be the case for Joel Ward. He'll get you a goal and two assists across the season or something. It's not interesting from an FPL perspective. So in your case, it probably is Gahey, I think. He's probably the one from set pieces. No doubt I've said that, you'll be right, and it'll be Anderson, who is also a threat from set pieces as well. They're all still the same price. You could take your pick from any of them, and whichever one you pick will probably be wrong.
It's always the way. You'll go, oh, Anderson done well last time. I'll get Anderson in. And then Guy goes and scores. You think, oh, well, I'll, and then you ship him out for a couple of weeks, and then he goes and gets a clean sheet and an assist probably. It's Palace defense. It's just so risky, you know. You're living on the edge of being a Palace defender.
What Palace players have you got at the moment?
I got Hughes.
Okay, interesting.
It was interesting, and I probably shouldn't have got him because I needed to get someone in because I dropped Son, you know, who didn't, and I got Bruno in instead of Ronaldo. So I've done all right there, but then I had to have 4 points something. I had like 4.7 in the bank. And I had
decided to spend a lot of it.
I did. I completely overlooked Ramsey, completely overlooked him. And I was like, why didn't I just buy Ramsey? And I thought I'll just spend it on Hughes. You know, why not? I haven't played him since.
Would you start Hughes? And say you did have a double in 25, would you start him? In your FPL team? Or would you just not bother?
I'd be hard-pressed. I'd be hard-pressed to play him.
Okay.
Maybe first up. Interesting. Maybe first up.
I wouldn't stress to move him on. Like, I think at 4.7, he's all right. He's a good footballer, Will Hughes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Really good footballer. He's another one's been, he's been unlucky with injuries, but he's kind of playing as the deeper of the midfield three to join it up now at the moment. So, I mean, no, if you were looking to invest in Palace, I'd do what you said and wait for MacArthur to come back at 4.3. That's probably what you'll end up doing, Mig. Probably. Moving that to MacArthur.
I'm probably dropping down or go to Ramsey at Villa. Just because they have
Do you have any intention to add an Elise or an Edouard this week?
Tempted by Edouard. Ship King.
More than Elise, yeah?
Probably more. Just because of personally for my team, because I could ship King out and get Ward. I mean, my midfield's not too bad. He says at like 300k or whatever I am. Yeah, that's fine. Well, I could get rid of Sterling.
Have you got Salah?
No, but Sterling. Sterling.
You are getting rid of Sterling, yeah, exactly. Then, aren't you?
so maybe not, because I think I need the money. I'll probably have to go downwards rather than upwards to Edouard. But yeah, if Salah's not there, not even a thing.
Yeah, there's no guarantee that he'll be back. As we keep saying, don't make any early transfers, kids. Mark, any Norwich in yours at the moment?
No Norwich. I've got two Palace, though. I've obviously got Butland and Gallagher. I'll probably be playing Gallagher against us.
Because I'll probably captain him.
No, I'll not go down that road again. I had Dennis the other night, so.
No, you hold on to him now, I think, Mark, in seriousness.
I've got a few flags on my bench. So, Livermento, Son, I've still got. I chose to sell Salah for the extra funds, and I kept Son, so Son can just sit there now. Yeah, I've got Chelsea boys to move out. So, yeah, Gallagher would probably be playing for me, I'd have thought.
And I take it that's defensive Chelsea players you want to move
out? Alonso and Mount. I could keep Mount if I really wanted to. But, yeah, certainly Alonso, I need to shift.
So that's Williams and Lise Melu sorted, I'm guessing, as the replacement.
He might go Gallagher, double up.
Elise, the more I'm thinking about it, the more nervous I am about that rotation potentially.
Yeah.
I think. And I think Mark Eder's really interesting actually as the third forward. And I think some of the fixtures coming up, like City, Liverpool, 25, 26, you feel quite comfortable benching him. And if it looks all right, it might land that little period 27, 29 you want to play him.
I think it's certainly one to be considered. Yeah, one to keep an eye on because a lot of this season, a lot of us have had that third striker. You know, like just save funds basically to power into the midfield or the defence. They've all had a turn, haven't they? King and Brozier. And yeah, I mean, because of his price, You know, you wouldn't. It wouldn't be the worst, put it that way, if you got another goal or two in the next. You know, you imagine you scored against Palace. And it's worth keeping an eye on. Because
Do you think people need to get Salah. No. I mean, Norwich is a football club. Do you think you'll buy before the transfer window shuts?
I think the only way would be if we shifted Cantwell. But it's because of what's been going on with him.
We've not even spoken about him.
No, well, says it all. But basically, I don't think anyone wants him. It's a shame, really, because ideally, at the start of the window, we'd have got £10-15 million for him and we'd have said, see you later, and we'd have been able to do some business. I think Evans would go definitely in the summer. I just think now, although we could probably get away with selling him in his position, we're not going to get the right sort of fee for him now. So
no, agreed. You'll get a better deal in the summer, mate.
I think so, yeah. So, I think we blew all our money in the summer. We was like 13th biggest spenders, ridiculously, across Europe, weren't we? And, you know, that money...
Josh Sargent is finally paying it back, mate.
yeah, well... It's only £4.5 million per goal at the minute, isn't it? So, yeah.
I'm pleased for him, actually, because it's not like he's been shit and he don't work. You don't really want to criticise a player that you can see he's putting the effort
in. No, like you said earlier, he does run up and down, up and down. He puts the effort in, and yeah.
Mig's going to use the right word, because Mig uses this to describe Jordan Ayew. Go on, Mig, say the word. My favourite word of yours, industrious, I think, is the word, mate.
He's completely industrial.
Sargent falls into that category, I think. Mig, you expecting Palace to do anything for window shuts? I mean, you were quite busy last summer as well.
Yeah,
so I'm going to guess no.
I haven't really seen many. The only real sort of biggest one I've seen is Aaron Ramsey, which you basically just go down the thread and one tweet says that it's not happening and the next tweet says that he's pretty much close and everything's all agreed. So... I don't really think we need.
He's been linked a lot with Burnley.
Yeah.
Is Ramsey getting your team?
I don't think so. I don't.
Wow.
I mean, I mean to have the name Aaron Ramsey in your squad would be great. I mean, but it's as many people I've seen saying, it's not the same Aaron Ramsey from his highs at Arsenal.
You can still expect Arsenal people in your replies, don't mate.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there'll be. Flooded me saying, oh, yeah, it'd be great. But, you know, he's played like 4 games this season through injuries and stuff like that. And I don't, with all the competition we have up front, I mean, you're going to have to ship out an Eze or a Gallagher or Hughes or something.
Yeah,
like that.
You know, I think Eze is going to convert into a midfield player.
Yeah, eventually. A number 10 with hopefully like a Gallagher, Hughes alongside him / behind him. I think that's probably the better three. I don't think he does as much out when he's out wide as he does in a number 10 role.
Cool. Thanks, gents. Really appreciate that. Let's do predictions before we let you both go. Martin, realise it's 2 weeks away from time of recording, but give us a correct score prediction, mate.
2-1 Norwich.
Good lad. Mig?
3-1 Palace.
Good lad. Oh, I'm under pressure now, aren't I? I'm going to bottle it. I'm going to go Desmond Tutu, actually. I can see goals in this one. It's part of why I'm really interested in Elise and possibly Ida as a backup option up front as well. I'll go 2-2. I think the moment's with you, Mark. Is opportunity over the next 5-6 game weeks to really give yourself a chance. Because even though you're 17th, I think if you ask most people, they'd still say to you, I still think Norwich will go down.
Yeah,
is that how you feel about it?
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? Because of sort of my affinity and all that sort of thing. But yeah, the worm's definitely turned. There's no doubt about it. Because if you'd have asked me 2 weeks ago, totally different, you know. And going back to the apathy before the Everton game, it's like it was, no one was really looking forward to it at all. And it was, we was going through routine and chore rather than because we particularly wanted to or we had expectations to pick up points. But, you know, it's not actually just the last 2 games. You know, Dean Smith, since he's come in, he's averaged a point a game since he's come in. And over the last 12 games, if you include, like, Farker's last game, we're 14th in the form charts. So it's, you know, the only thing is that sort of clouds people a little bit is obviously when we do lose, sometimes we get spanked, don't we? You know, we've had a few absolute pacings. So let's hope. Well, I was going to say let's hope not too many more, but we do have a couple of tricky fixtures after Palace.
I mean, let's be honest, Mark, if you're losing 3-0 at Tottenham, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, not great.
Isn't that right, Mig?
Yeah. You can't. I mean,
gents,
you
know. Pleasure. It's very rare I get to put a dig in on this podcast.
Oh, that's all right. You know, we win 3-0, you win 3-0. You know,
yeah. Just returning the compliment. I know, Mig. Thank you, mate. Guys, pleasure. Thank you so much, both of you. Mark, where can everyone follow you on the Bird app, mate?
FPO _ Badger.
Good man. And Mig?
At Migtavius, MIGTAVIUS.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, gents. Next week's Clash of Correspondents, guys, Manchester City versus Brentford with FPL Pringle and FPL Dummy Tom. That'll be next Thursday on, is it February next week?
Yes.
February the 3rd or something, I think. Thanks so much, Mark and to me. Good luck in Game Week 24, lads. Cue music, please, man child.
Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.